Hello and welcome to At Home This Morning, our magazine programme for older listeners, which we hope will also be of interest to the not so old. I'm Richard Davis, and I hope you'll stay with me for the next hour. Coming up in that time, we'll be hearing about a series of open days that are taking place at the beginning of September at various historic properties throughout Brighton and Hove. We'll also be finding out about a scheme run by Brighton and Hove Council to keep us all healthy, and about a poetry competition which is being organised by the Brighton and Hove Arts Council. As usual, we'll be giving out various email addresses, website addresses and telephone numbers during the course of the programme, so you may like to have a pencil and paper handy so that you can write them down. So let's get started by hearing about the open days that are coming up at the beginning of September. The scheme is called Heritage Open Days, and it's a national scheme, but in Brighton it's being coordinated by the staff at the Regency Townhouse. So to find out more, Chris English invited Kevin Wilshire from the Regency Townhouse to come into our studio. And he began by asking Kevin what his position at the Regency Townhouse is.
My role at the Regency Townhouse is manyfold. I've done all sorts of jobs over the years, including cleaning early 19th century cornice work, which involves spraying with steam and scraping off with soft wood so you don't damage the plaster. I've mixed sand and cement, I've sanded floorboards, and floorboard sanding had to be done using the traditional methods. So rather than using a power tool or sandpaper even, I was asked to sand it using a pile of sand and a block of wood. So that took many hours of hard work and was less effective probably than using modern tools.
We're here to talk about Heritage Open Days that are coming up in Brighton Hove. What are they?
Heritage Open Days have been going since 1994. They're now the country's largest heritage and culture festival. It started off with 700 events back in 94. It's grown to a national festival that now has 5,000 events. It's a partnership between the public sector, the private sector, and volunteers. And in fact, nowadays it uses about 40,000 volunteers each year to get these things off the ground.
That's nationally, really?
It's nationally. So 5,000 events nationally. The Regency Townhouse, who I now volunteer for, puts together the programme for Brighton and Hove each year. And this year we've got about 115 events.
Is that all over one day?
The festival lasts for 4 days. So it's September the 7th to the 10th. That's Thursday to Sunday. It starts, I think the first event is Thursday morning at 11, and the last event is Sunday afternoon sometime.
So what exactly comprises these events?
The aim is to open up buildings, gardens, places that aren't generally open to the public. And we're trying to inspire people to take an interest in their local history, their local heritage, their local culture. And the great thing about it is that because it's largely volunteer-driven, it helps inspire all sorts of different people. It attracts people from all walks of life. So personally, my career's in IT, but I've always had an interest and a passion for local history. So it's a great opportunity for me to give something back to society and to hopefully inspire and entertain people around Brighton and Hove.
So what sort of things will people be able to see?
There are huge ranges. So geographically in Brighton and Hove, it spreads from the Palace Pier in the south, you can't get much further south than that, to Saddlescombe Farm, which is run by the National Trust in the South Downs National Park, and from Saltdean Lido in the east to Shoreham Harbour in the west.
When you mentioned those and the Palace Pier, I mean, the Palace Pier is open anyway, so what's special about an open Heritage Open Day?
You're dead right. So some places are generally open to the public, and for them to take part in the Heritage Open Days, they have to find something that isn't usually open to the public. So if you go on the Palace Pier History Tour, the tour's given by a chap called Kevin Newman. He's a professional historian, and he'll take you into parts of the pier which the public generally aren't allowed into. So it's a chance to see things you wouldn't normally see, learn facts that you wouldn't normally know, and it's a chance to be nosy into places that you can't usually get at. And that generally appeals to people.
I mean, that's a bit like being a journalist, you know. Being nosy is what we do.
Yeah. Yeah, people always like to see around other people's houses.
Totally.
So one of the attractions to the Heritage Open Days is that we open some fashionable houses. So the Regency townhouse, for one, is open to the public. Nick does tours. We open 33 Palmyra Mansions, which is usually used as an English language studio. That's generally not open to the public. Some of the things that are new this year, we're doing several tours of World War II air raid shelters underneath Downs Junior School on Ditchling Road. I think there are 14 tours and 10 people can get on each tour. So 140 people have got a chance to see World War II air raid shelters.
A lot of people will be able to remember, of course, amongst our listeners who are that age, that they might have been there.
So absolutely, it's going to appeal to people that don't remember the Second World War and are interested to know what it was all about. And it'll appeal to people like my parents. My parents grew up around that area, went to the schools around there. And my father used to use the air raid shelters when he was about 5 or 6 during the war. So it's going to appeal to all sorts of people.
And people with different mobility issues? I mean, we talk about older people.
Yeah.
Will there be tours that people of my age can get involved?
Yeah, most of the tours are accessible. The air raid shelters isn't a good one. It's not a good example at the moment because there's a ladder you use to get down into it. Now, one of the reasons that the Take Shelter people, who is what the organisation is called, one of the reasons they're open is to get publicity for it and try and raise some money so they can improve the access to it. So in the future, people with less ability will be able to get down there.
You talked then about money. Do these things have an admission charge?
No. To be part of the festival, they have to be free to everyone. So generally, they're given by tour guides who are volunteers. They give their time for free, and the events are free to get in. You can make a contribution to a charity or to the event itself if you like, but they're absolutely free to get in.
So who are you aiming at, basically? Is it young people or is it older people who might remember these places in their heyday?
We're aiming at anyone who has an interest in local history and culture, and that can spread from all sorts of walks of life. So this year we're partnering with REBA, the Royal Institute of British Architects. So they're here to push architecture, and they're opening up all sorts of places which generally aren't open to the public. They're doing a tour of two modernist residential homes in Saltdean. They're doing a tour of some new buildings in Bryan College. So that's going to appeal to people interested in architecture. This year, because the National Heritage Open Days Festival is sponsored by the National Trust, they've teamed up with LGBT organisations to commemorate the 50th anniversary of the partial decriminalisation of homosexuality. So this year we're trying to appeal to local LGBT people to get involved, either by attending events or to run events. And we've got a number of events run by those organisations. There's a walk around Brunswick town called a Wibbly Wobbly Walk. Let me give you a quick description of what that's about. So this is a tour run by a chap called Tom Sargent, who's co-founder of the Brighton Our Story lesbian, gay and bisexual history charity. And it'll be visiting the secret haunts of the twilight men of days gone by. We've also got a talk by a prominent lesbian who's going to be talking about what the ladies' maid saw. So this is in the days of upstairs and downstairs people and
Downton Abbey and the like.
Downton Abbey. Probably not featured in Downton Abbey too much. This is about the staff dressing the lady of the house. So she got to see the lady in the nude. And there's some history and speculation about what might have happened in those scenarios. So that sounds like fun.
It does indeed. Now, this is a very long list.
It is.
You're talking about 150 plus places in Brighton Hove alone.
Yeah.
Can people find this online, or is there another way of finding out the information?
There are two main ways to find out. The National Organising Committee, the Heritage Open Days people themselves, publish all these events on their national website. They'll put adverts into the paper, but typically the adverts will ask you to book online. And locally, we publish our own local programme for Brighton and Hove using the Regency Townhouse website. So for anyone that's got access to the internet, that's rth.org.uk, and you can follow the links to our Heritage Open Days weekend.
And if somebody hasn't got access to the internet?
It's probably best if they talk to a friend who does.
Right.
Or you can phone up the Regency Townhouse. You'll find the number in all sorts of places, and they'll help you out with the booking.
Finally, Kevin, can you just repeat the dates when they're on?
Yeah, the dates are from the 7th to the 10th of September, so that's Thursday morning to Sunday afternoon. Sunday afternoon is quite busy, so if you're keen to go, look for events on Thursday, Friday and Saturday.
You just mentioned then that some of the events on Sunday afternoon were already either fully booked or getting that way. How can people find out if there's availability?
Yeah, the events aren't booked at the moment. They just will be busy. So half the events are open doors. People can just turn up and go in. About half the events you need to book tickets for, even though they're free. And tickets for those events become available at midday on August the 14th.
And again, that's online.
And that's online.
At the Regency Townhouse website.
Through the Regency Townhouse website, rth.org.uk.
Kevin, thank you very much indeed.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Chris English was talking to Kevin Wilshire of the Regency Townhouse about the forthcoming Heritage Open Days. If you'd like to find out more about the Open Days, you can go to the Regency Townhouse's website, which is rth.org.uk. That's rth.org.uk. Or you can phone the Regency Townhouse on Brighton 206306. That's 01273 206 306. And the open days run from September the 7th to September the 10th. Now, another event that's coming up in the not-too-distant future is a one-day poetry festival run by the Brighton and Hove Arts Council. The festival is actually on November the 18th, so it's a little bit in the future, but the reason I'm mentioning it at this stage is that connected with the festival is a poetry competition, and that's already started. In fact, the competition opened for entries on July the 15th, and it runs through till October the 15th, and the winners will be declared at the poetry festival on November the 18th. Well, to tell us more about it, in the studio with me today is Jason Squire of the Brighton and Hove Arts Council. Welcome, Jason. Perhaps you could start by telling us who the Brighton and Hove Arts Council are.
The Brighton and Hove Arts Council was formed in the 1970s and we're made up of a group of trustees, volunteers. So we're a non-profit organisation. And I think our remit is to encourage and promote arts within the local arts community. So that's in Brighton, Hove and all round Sussex.
And is it actually connected to the City Council?
No, we're an independent charitable group, but we are supported slightly by the Brighton and Hove City Council, who are very generous enough to give us a small grant.
And you publish an arts diary, don't you?
We do. We publish an arts diary four times a year, and it is distributed throughout Brighton and Hove and hopefully sort of further afield around Sussex. And the diary is exactly what it says. So it publishes all the artistic events that's going on. So that will be musical events, artistic events, that's sort of art showings, dramas, poetry readings, writing groups, all things associated with the arts within the local community. So it's a pretty invaluable source to give an indication in terms of where to find these.
And how do people get hold of the Arts Diary?
They are distributed. They're distributed in libraries, cafes, throughout Sussex. But by all means, if people want to get their own sort of particular copy, then it might be a good idea to go onto the website, which is brightonandhoveartscouncil.org.uk.
Now, you were mentioning earlier that poetry was one of the things that you supported, and I gather you're running a poetry competition and festival.
We are. We run a poetry competition sort of every 2 years. And this year we thought that we would expand it or embellish it. And along with the competition, we thought we would create a festival as well.
So, well, the competition has been running for some years, but the festival's brand new, is it?
The festival is brand new. And there was someone who suggested, why didn't we get some star performers? And the name of Carol Ann Duffy came out of that meeting. Carol Ann Duffy is the poet laureate. And we all sort of said, no, we'll never be able to get hold of Carol Ann Duffy. But we contacted her through her agent. And I suppose to our astonishment and to our delight, she said she'd be absolutely thrilled to come along and headline our poetry festival.
That's great. And she's bringing a musician with her as well, isn't she?
John Sampson. I don't know John Sampson. I don't know Carol Ann Duffy, to be honest, but Carol Ann Duffy was pretty insistent that he accompanied her, so I suspect that it's going to be a pretty exciting show. In other words, Carol Ann Duffy will be reading her poems and John Sampson will be accompanying her with some music as well, so it promises to be quite an event.
And what's the date for that?
November the 18th, it's a Saturday, November the 18th, it's at the Old Market, and loads of details on how to book tickets are on our dedicated website, which is bhacpoetryfestival.org.uk.
And is the BHAC Poetry Festival typed all as one word?
It's all one word, bhacpoetryfestival.org.uk.
If people don't have the internet, how can they get hold of tickets?
People can buy tickets directly from the Old Market itself, just by going into the booking office. The tickets are £20 each, but the festival will last from 4 o'clock to about 9 o'clock in the evening. So there'll be a rich variety of poetry.
So it's a one-day event?
Indeed, it's a one-day event.
OK, well, coming on to the competition, it's obviously connected to the festival. Who is the competition open to?
The competition is a two-tiered competition. We are in partnership with the University of Brighton. So there is a competition for students who study in Sussex, and the entry to the competition is free. Poems must be less than 40 lines. And at the student level, there are prizes of £150 for the first prize and five prizes worth £20. For the adult version, as it were, non-students, the first prize is £1,000.
That's pretty good.
Plus other prizes of £250 given by Higgity Pies. There is a writing course that is being given by the University of Brighton, which is also valued at £250. And there are four other prizes of £25 each. So there are some cracking opportunities to win prizes if you enter the competition. The first entry is £6, and all subsequent entries are £4 each. So there is no limit to the number of entries you can put in. So if you put in two poems, it will cost you £10. Three poems, it will cost you £14, and so on. We're very, very excited about it, Richard. To have Carol Ann Duffy come along to the festival to read her poems and to give out the prizes. She will be giving out the prizes to the competition winners. And I think that would be a sort of fantastic draw and a fantastic privilege for those people who enter.
Presumably you'll be publishing the winning poem and possibly some of the runners-up. What's the copyright position? Does the copyright pass over to you, or does it stay with the poet?
The individual poets retain their own copyright, but by the rules of the competition, we are allowed to publish their poems on our website and in any other media we choose. I should add that any poem submitted to us must not have been published before, so they must be original works.
I gather the entry period for the competition has already started. How long does it go on for?
The competition started on July the 15th, and it goes on for 3 months. So midnight, October the 15th, is the cut-off point. So I would say plenty of time, but we're hoping for a good number of entries. So if you've got some poems, then I really would encourage you to get them down, send them off, get them on the website. It's a fairly easy process. You load them up, and off you go. So it's July 15th to October the 15th is the actual competition, and the judging will start after October the 15th.
And once again, for people who haven't got internet access, can they get the poems to you in any other way?
There are thousands of forms being distributed door to door, and they'll also be available through libraries and other public sources. But if not, there is a PO box number that that people can write to.
You can send your entries to Poetry Competition, box number 5447, Brighton, BN58LA, with an accompanying cheque. So that's £6 for the first poem and £4 for all subsequent poems.
Now, coming back to the actual festival, I noticed that in addition to Carol Ann Duffy and John Sampson, there was an appearance by, I assume it's a group of people, called Hammer and Tongue. Who are they?
Hammer and Tongue are a group of poets who operate out of the Commedia once a month. They're great fun, and they are there to start us all off at 4 o'clock. Not only will they be reading their own poetry or performing their own poetry, I should say, but they'll also be operating what's called a poetry slam competition. There will have been previous rounds at the university. So we should get a lot of excitement and fun by 10 of the university students reading out their poems and the whole audience voting on who they think is the best poem.
So that's an entirely separate and presumably less serious competition than the main one.
Yes, I mean, I think that we really hope that the festival will be great fun. We're also scheduled to have a character who's well-known in the area called Attila the Stockbroker. So we hope that it's going to be a wide-ranging festival whereby we hear excellent poets performing their works. We're going to have the competition winners reading their works. We're going to have irreverent stuff from Attila the Stockbroker, I hope. And, of course, we're going to have the poet laureate herself, Carol Ann Duffy, with John Sampson, you know, to complete what we believe to be, you know, a fantastic sort of celebration of poetry. I think it's the first time that Brighton will have seen an event such as this.
Is the festival going to be a regular event now?
We're really hoping that the festival will be a regular event. I mean, fingers crossed. We're very, very sort of confident. And if there is a terrific appetite, not only for the competition itself, but for a festival with individuals such as Carol Ann Duffy, then we'll expand it and we'll make it, you know, bigger and better. But this is our first go at it, but we feel fantastically confident that it'll be a great success.
Sounds great. Thanks very much, Jason.
Thank you, Richard.
I was talking to Jason Squire of the Brighton and Hove Arts Council about their poetry competition and festival. If you want to find out more, and indeed if you want to book tickets for the festival, you can go to their dedicated website, which is at bhacpoetryfestival.org.uk. That's BHAC Poetry Festival, which is typed all as one word with no spaces, .org.uk. Or you can get tickets from the box office at the Old Market, which is where the festival's taking place. Tickets cost £20, and the festival itself is on November the 18th. If you're interested in entering the poetry competition, you can also find entry forms on the website that I've just mentioned. And in fact, you may get an entry form pushed through your door because they're distributing them all over the city. Poems can also be submitted to the competition via the website. But if you don't have internet access and you want to enter the competition, you can post your poems to Poetry Competition, Box 5447, Brighton, BN508LA. That's Poetry Competition, Box 5447, Brighton, BN508LA. If you're entering the adult competition as opposed to the student one, don't forget that you have to pay an entry fee, which is £6 for your first poem and £4 for each subsequent one. So if you post your entry to the address I've just given, you should include a cheque for the appropriate amount made out to Brighton and Hove Arts Council. And the closing date for entries is October the 15th. Well, if you heard the last edition of At Home This Morning, you'll remember that we spoke to Richard D'Souza and Petra Brown from the Specialist Older Adults Mental Health Scheme. And they were recommending that a good way to minimise your chances of getting mental health problems in older age is to keep active, take plenty of exercise. Well, since I started presenting At Home This Morning a few years ago, I've been continually surprised by the number of teams there are in Brighton and Hove City Council dedicated to diverse subjects. And sure enough, there's one devoted to persuading adults to keep healthy. It's called, as you might expect, the Healthy Lifestyles Team. And its manager, Julie Stacey, recently came into our studio to tell Chris English about what they do. Chris started the interview by suggesting to Julie that her job title, which is Active for Life Manager Adults, was a bit of a mouthful.
Well, I'm an Active for Life manager, so I work within the Healthy Lifestyles team at the council, and we support people to become more active so that they can get the health benefits of that. So hopefully it's not too much of a mouthful.
you say you work with old people. What do you actually do?
Well, we deliver weekly sessions across the city for people of all ages, in fact, but we do a lot of work for older people. We run lots of events out in community. We support other organisations to help people be more active, and we work a lot with Freedom Leisure, who are the company that manage all the leisure facilities in the city as well. So that's a big part of what we do.
Okay, Freedom Leisure. I mean, I personally don't go to gyms and that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. So is that who Freedom Leisure are?
Freedom Leisure run all the centres on behalf of the council. Yeah, they do. But they offer, obviously, there's gyms at most of the facilities, but there's swimming pools, and there's a whole range of classes and sessions that people can get involved in. So there's lots on offer.
What sort of things?
Well, there's, for example, at King Alfred Leisure Centre, there's a table tennis session with short tennis that we run in partnership with Freedom. There is a Forever Active session at Port Slade. At Mulscombe you can play badminton, or there's walking football, which is a fairly new sport that's proving very popular with older people. Yeah, so there's lots of things, really.
And do you have to be fit?
You absolutely don't have to be fit at all. And with all the work that we do as a council, and Freedom Leisure would agree, we welcome people of all levels, all abilities, and we just really want to get people more active in any way that they're happy to do so. So, no.
Is it important that older people are active? And if so, why?
Well, unfortunately, we find that people, as they go into older age, can become less active. But we also know that if people do maintain their activity levels or really try and be as active as they can, then they're less likely to have health conditions as they go into older age. They're more likely to maintain their independence. They're less likely to be isolated socially. And also one of the key things is they're less likely to fall, because we know that lots of elderly people do suffer falls, which can be really catastrophic. So we're doing quite a lot of work to support people to be more active, to work on their balance, which helps prevent falls. So that's a big issue regarding older people.
I mean, is it designed specifically for older people or anybody that is not fit?
Well, we work with people of all ages. But I think today we're talking specifically about older people. As we know, they can really benefit. But as a project and as a council, we do work with people of all ages.
Now, I'm probably in the upper category of age, and my activity is sort of basically walking around the house, getting in the car, driving somewhere, and sitting down again. That's presumably not good.
Well, that's a really good point, because it really depends on... Walking is a fantastic way of being active, but one of the key things is to walk using a bit of effort, so that it's perhaps more of a brisk walk than a kind of saunter. So that if you do little bursts of brisk walking, if you aim to do... It's around 150 minutes a week of activity, so that can be walking. But if you do it at a moderate intensity, so fairly brisk, then you'll meet your kind of guidelines in terms of being active. So you can get your activity levels appropriate by walking briskly. So that's...
And of course, older people find it more difficult to walk briskly.
Yeah.
Is that fair?
Well, it's really about the individual. So it's what's brisk for an individual. So it might actually be quite a slow walk, but if that person is, if their heart rate's getting up a little bit higher, if they're feeling like it's a bit of an effort, they're having to breathe a bit more quickly, then that's absolutely perfect. So it's very much down to an individual what that moderate intensity is, if that makes sense.
It does. Mm-hmm. And as far as my case is concerned, sort of knees are beginning to ache, and I haven't got any problems, but I know older people do have trouble with their hips, for example. Should that put people off, or should you sort of go through the aches and pains?
I think it's really important to get medical advice, just to check in with your medical professional that you're okay to exercise. Any of the sessions that you attend with us, an instructor will check in with you. They'll ask you to just fill out a really simple form, which will flag up any health conditions or medical issues. And we're very sort of qualified, if you like, to support people to do activities regardless of their medical conditions. But we would say not to be in pain, of course. We run a lot of seated exercise sessions, and all of our sessions that we do welcome people regardless of what their medical or health conditions are, largely speaking.
Now, a lot of people will have seen pictures on television or in the press of these modern gyms with lots of machines. It looks like torture chambers. Are you really suggesting that people of in their 70s and 80s should take part in those sort of activities?
Not at all. Our message is really to for all of us to think about what we enjoy, because being active, really, we would hope, would be an enjoyable thing for all of us. And there's so many different ways of being active, and that some people love swimming, some people love dancing, some people love walking. So the gym is just one choice out of countless choices. So please, you know, don't feel that you have to go to a gym at all, by any means.
Now, a lot of people will be possibly a bit embarrassed about going for the first time, not knowing what to expect. Should they be?
I honestly believe, and we talk to lots of people about taking that first step into being more active or to joining a new group or a new activity. And we're all the same. Everyone feels nervous or feels a bit unconfident. We all feel the same. If you can just take that first step, maybe go with a friend, you're very welcome to give us a call if you want to come to one of our sessions, and we can talk you through how it works and we can try and support you to make that first step. So please, the first step's very important.
And how should people make that first step? How do they find out more, having heard this?
There's a new leaflet that Freedom Leisure have put together, which is about being active in older age. People may have seen it because it started to be distributed. So those leaflets are in the leisure centres, in the libraries, and they include information about older people's sessions, plus information about the leisure card, which offers a 40% discount on Freedom Leisure activities for people on a low income. There's also a brochure about Active for Life initiative, which the team that I'm in work on. And again, those are in the libraries. There's lots of information on the websites if people have internet access. So there is information out there. If you wanted to give our team a call, you can do that on 01273 292724 and talk to one of us, and then we can support you.
And give us that number again.
01273 292724. So that's the number for the Healthy Lifestyles team. And then I could give you the number for Freedom Leisure if you want to talk to them directly.
Okay.
Which is 0845 803 5519.
Okay. Now, you mentioned discounts. So presumably this isn't free. There is a cost involved. Is it huge?
Well, the sessions that we run will all be, the council run through the Healthy Lifestyles team, are all low cost or free. We have a programme of health walks. We have 18 per week, and they're all free and drop in. But all our other activities are £2 for older people, so really low cost. As I mentioned, the leisure card provides a 40% discount for activities for those on pension credit. And we know that not a lot of older people are aware of this, so we're really keen to get the message out that this is available, because it is a big discount. And then some of the other activities that I've mentioned that help happening in the leisure centres are also low cost. So we're not talking about the £6, £7 sessions, which we know are fairly standard prices. We are talking about lower cost.
And if you've got an aim with your campaign and your scheme, what would it be in a few words?
To support people to understand that being active can be a really good thing, and to have a go and to really get the benefits of that and enjoy it.
And there's hope for people like me, is there?
Oh, absolutely. Even you, Chris, there's hope for you.
Julie, thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Chris English has been talking to Julie Stacey, the manager of the Healthy Lifestyles team in Brighton and Hove City Council. Julie gave out quite a lot of information there. I'm not going to repeat it all. I'll just give you a few. If you have internet access, you can find out about most of the things that Julie mentioned by going to the activity page on Brighton and Hove Council's website. And the address for that is www.brighton-hove.gov.uk/activity. I'll give you that again. It's www.brighton-hove.gov.uk/activity. You can contact the Healthy Lifestyles team by email, and the email address is healthylifestyles@brighton-hove.gov.uk. That's Healthy Lifestyles, typed all as one word, @brighton-hove.gov.uk. Or you can phone them on Brighton 292724. That's 01273 292724. And that brings us to the end of our programme for this time. Thank you very much for listening. I hope you've enjoyed everything you've heard in this edition of At Home This Morning, our magazine programme for older listeners. There'll be another edition in a fortnight's time. But in the meantime, if you'd like to get in touch with me to let me know what you think of the programme, or perhaps to suggest items you might like me to cover in future editions, I'd love to hear from you. There are two ways of getting in touch. You can either contact me by email at the following address, athomethismorning@greymattersproductions.org.uk. That's athomethismorning@greymattersproductions.org.uk. Or you can contact me via the Radio Reverb website. If you go to the website and find the page that's devoted to At Home This Morning, you can send me an email from there. And whichever method you choose, I'd love to hear from you. Well, it now only remains for me, Richard Davis, on behalf of Grey Matters Productions, who make this programme for Radio Reverb, to thank everyone who's taken part in the programme. Once again, to thank you for listening, and until we meet again, to wish you all the very best. Goodbye.
At Home This Morning is a Grey Matters production for Radio Reverb.